We've all been there. You have a question about your credit card. You call the number for help and can't get a hold of anyone. If only you had a Discover card. With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. A real person. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
When you think of Sheryl Crow, you probably think of songs you want to rock out to while you're driving down the street. Soak Up the Sun, All I Want to Do, Every Day's a Winding Road. But you may not think of Sheryl the woman or Sheryl the mother. And let me tell you, that will all change with this conversation you're about to hear. Beyond rocking out on stage and those killer jeans, there's so much more to Sheryl Crow, and I'm so excited for you to hear how we connected. Like me, Sheryl's a breast cancer survivor and a mom later in life, also by way of adoption. Her otherwise private personal life became very public during her engagement and subsequent breakup with Lance Armstrong. But these days, just shy of 60 years old, I know, I couldn't believe it either, right? Sheryl is happy. She's willing to open up and be honest about getting to the other side of so many trying moments in life. I hope you enjoy my conversation with rock star Sheryl Crow. I'm Hoda Kotb. Welcome to my podcast, Making Space. Wait, I'm talking to you. Can you hear me?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Oh my God, I'm dying. First of all, hi.
Hi.
I'm so happy. I have been waiting for this interview patiently because I have always felt weirdly connected to you in so many different ways because I feel like our lives have these weird parallel paths. And the more I learn about you, the more I feel it. And
oh, I
just
want
to say, I've missed you for a long time. I'm just happy to sit with you. But how are you? You're in Nashville.
Okay, I'm
What's
good.
Happening?
Yeah. I'm in Nashville. We are doing a little bit of touring, mostly on the weekends. Boys are 11 and 14.
No, they're not.
I am seriously not a cool mom anymore. I'm like, you just don't know, mom.
You don't get it.
Can
I remind you of something? You were here at the Today Show downstairs in the dressing room with your boys when they were little.
Yeah.
And I went down there and I remembered thinking, watching you with your kids, I want something like that one day.
And I'm telling you, I have more friends. I'm just like, you can do this. Babies are coming in and you don't get the wrong kids. It just doesn't happen that way. And my kids so clearly not only picked me, but picked each other. And man, what a cool honor. You know, I tell my kids all the time, I am so honored to be your mom. You know, I mean, I even told my 14-year-old that last night because he hugged my parents as they were leaving. Oh. Just involuntarily. My dad's 89 and my mom's 84. And I said, I love you so much, but I just want to tell you what a cool person you are. Because not everybody just wants to volunteer a hug. You know, you're a teenager. He just got up and hugged him. And I was just like, man, you're an awesome boy with a giant heart. And he's like, I know, Mom. Like, I know.
Mom, Sheryl, at the beginning? Because, I mean, I remembered thinking, like, I never spoke out loud the fact that I wanted children because I thought I had missed my window.
Yes.
So I thought, I hate to say something out loud that I know can't happen. So I didn't speak it. And one day I was walking with a girlfriend down a street and she said, well, me and you, we didn't want to have kids, you know, so it worked out great. And I said, well, I actually did.
Yeah.
And I just thought I missed it. And I just remember saying it out loud and how weird that was to speak it and then to say it again. And it kind of like made it real. Sometimes I feel like even if you whisper your secret into the mirror, the bathroom mirror, at least it gives it breath and life. Did you always want kids? Did you talk about it when you were younger? Did you always think about it?
I just never didn't think I would have kids, you know, and I think I was thinking of it in the context of family. I wasn't like, it wasn't like I saw myself being pregnant. I couldn't wait to experience having a baby inside of me. It wasn't so much that. It was much more about the wonder of getting to raise a person, you know? I mean, obviously, as you know, Hoda, I was 45 when I adopted my first one. I was 48 when I adopted my second one. I had the gift of getting a lot of things out of my system before I had my kids or before I got my kids. So there wasn't anything that I felt like I was missing. If I stayed home and something was going on, I just didn't feel like I was missing anything, that I wanted to be anywhere else. And that's a gift. I think if I was in my 20s and even early 30s trying to be in the world that I've lived in for the last 28 years, I might have been pulled in a lot of different directions. But, you know, there's one thing about a woman and the biological clock. You know, we get blamed a lot for the demises of relationships. Well, her biological clock, or she wanted kids and I wasn't ready for that. And it's such a, I don't want to say a sexist thing, but it does feel like that, you know? And I remember my last relationship crumbling largely because that is what I wanted. I didn't want to be somebody's girlfriend and raise their kids. I didn't want to be a stepmom and not be made a wife and a mom. You know, it's sort of like being in a relationship with someone, but being also the babysitter, but not being getting to be the real parent. And yeah, that did crumble that relationship. And I came out of it and also had breast cancer and went through that. And it was my mom who said, why don't you just get a surrogate and get some sperm? And my head is like exploding. Like, what did she just say? Like, just have my own babies? What? But it was that. It was her saying, look, you know what? If you adopt, you have a family around you who will stand at the altar with you at baptism and say, we are his community or her community. And that's what they did. And that's kind of what gave me the, you know, the life raft to not limit myself to that. Oh, you got to be married. You got to be stable. Then you have kids. My story didn't lay out like that, but the story I was telling myself limited what I thought I could have till somebody stepped in and said, wait a minute, your story doesn't have to look like your mom and dad's story. You know, it doesn't have to look like the conventional family that you had. Families look like all different things.
And you know what's interesting? You just, you said something in the middle of that story that struck me too, because I was diagnosed with breast cancer at the same time my relationship was falling apart. And what was weird about that moment, when you just mentioned it, I had this weird feeling. But what I remember about it was kind of strange because I felt like I had two pains going on at the same time and I couldn't go down the rabbit hole on one. Like, I was so angry at him and then I had to go in for my test and they were like, you need a mastectomy. And then I was so mad at the doctors and why me? And I ate apples and ran in Central Park and what are you talking about? I was so mad. And then I was thinking about, but what about, oh, and him? You know, but it was almost like having two kids and one kid's coloring on the wall and the other kid's spilling flour all over the floor. And you only have so much attention. So you can't get super mad at that kid because you got this kid over here. so weirdly, your grief is kind of lessened. And I wondered in a weird way, did that help me in some strange way? I couldn't get so depressed on one thing because I had two things to worry about.
Yes. I mean, not to analyze my last relationship, and it was a public relationship. There were a lot of facets to it, but it was a relationship that, that I seem to keep going back to. And I think when I got diagnosed with breast cancer, that was like, oh, wait a minute. I think we have to really look at this and you have to put yourself first. And once I got that message, I really had to sit down and learn how to hold an emotion. I remember my friend who I used to say was kind of psychic, but he said, no, everybody's intuitive. It's just whether you really want to know the truth. He had said to me, he's like, you know, emotions are the gateway to awakening. And I'd not really understood that until I had to go through a real grieving process. I had to not do that thing that we get so good at, which is, oh, just don't think about it. Just stay busy. Just make yourself busy. Don't dwell in it. And that is the antithesis of what we need to do for healing. You know, we need to actually sit with the pain, the anger, the grief, all of it that goes along with getting to the other side. And, you know, the only way to get through it is to, you know, plow through it and experience it. And so for me, I just embraced it. I said, I'm not going to make a record. I'm not going to pick up my guitar. I'm not going to journal. I'm actually going to sit and be angry and be sad and be and grieve and all that. And when I came out of it, I just felt like, oh, okay, I remember now who I am. And all these events, I think, kind of help us remember who we are. We get so far away from it sometimes with all the messaging that we put on ourselves about who we are or we aren't. Mm-hmm. And it was a serious cleanup.
Wow.
Cleanup on aisle seven.
No, well, I love like no records and no journaling. That's interesting just to sit in the middle of it. And I think that that's something that's really big because we just interviewed a couple of people. I was just thinking about Chelsea Handler said she had to get all the way right with herself before she could, you know, kind of square with someone she wanted to meet.
No, it's true. I mean, that same guy that spoke to me about, mm-hmm. you know, holding an emotion is the same person that said, at a certain point, you weigh how much someone is giving you emotionally and how much mm-hmm. They're taking away emotionally. And, you know, when you get mm-hmm. down to just, you know, once you take the attraction away from it and you mm-hmm. look at what they give to your life, what they bring to you, if they edify or if they're, you know, trying to dim your light, it mm-hmm. you can step away from it, but when you're in it, it's so hard, you know?
It's hard.
It is.
Did you ever, I never, and this is probably not healthy, this is me, I never really had a follow-up conversation after it was over. That was the end.
Yeah.
And that's how I played it.
Well, I mean, I think in some situations, I mean, man, I'll tell you what, I am blessed to have a wise mom, but she said, mm-hmm. no matter what you think you're going to get from that conversation, you're never going to get what you think. And I mean, that's part of, I guess, the end of a relationship. There's not generally closure mm-hmm. unless you both are, I mean, that if you communicated that way, you might not have split. But in my relationship, mm-hmm. I was not ever going to get the kind of answer I thought I was going to get.
Yeah,
and
that's interesting.
I would always cut back and go, I'd feel like I'd been gaslighted. Like for me, part of that not being productive was just sitting with all of it and mm-hmm. not, you know, I don't know if you're like this, Hoda, but I have measured myself for almost my whole life by my productivity. Mm-hmm. And that's what gave me self-worth and not mm-hmm. not just the quantity, but the quality. You know, it couldn't be mm-hmm. it couldn't be 10 songs. It had to be 10 great songs. Mm-hmm. And they couldn't be 10 top 200 songs. They had to be 10 top 10 songs. You know, it's like
mm-hmm.
at a certain point, it's exhausting and you wind up never feeling fulfilled. So, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes in order to fill yourself, you have to like sit with it.
Coming up, more with Sheryl Crow as she reflects on her career and what it took to break into the industry and the obstacles she had to overcome.
Bring on spring projects with Spring Black Friday Savings from The Home Depot. With free delivery on over 2 million items, you can bring on the spring cleaning, the patio decorating, and the front yard gardening. And if you need it fast, get same-day delivery on thousands of products like fertilizer and seeds to keep your yard looking beautiful. Bring on the spring doing and spring your way only at The Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select in-stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
I
I was just thinking back to the infancy of your career, and I know that people look at you and think, you know, they see you, first of all, just, I watched you, I think, at Radio City. That was one of my final concerts before the world shut down, and I loved every second of it. But I was just thinking about, people probably think, well, that was, somehow it was easy for her. But I loved knowing that, and I think it was 1986, you were pounding the pavement, and they were like, no, darling, no, yeah. No, not you.
Oh, yeah.
Nothing, no doors were opening, and you were talented. So what was happening there?
Well, you know, I look back on it and I think, man, I was so lucky to come up when I did and not come up now, because now everything is so brand oriented and so all about self-promotion. Mm-hmm. But back in the old days, back in the dark ages, I moved from St. Louis, where I was a school teacher, and I thought, well, I was 25. Well, no, I was 24. And mm-hmm. I had a bunch of tapes, and I thought, I'm just going to go out to LA and see what happens. And I got a Thomas guide, and I found out where all the studios were, and I took my tapes to every studio and thought, well, if I get into the studios, then somebody will pick it up and listen to it and discover me, you know? And slowly, I wound up getting a little bit of work, and then I overheard some backup singers talking about the Michael Jackson audition, and then I crashed the Michael Jackson audition. And I mean, it just, it's funny.
Crashed the Michael Jackson audition.
Yes.
Just even to say that out loud.
It's crazy. And I think part of my, what was in my favor was my naivete. I mean, I just didn't ever think, I just thought, well, if what's the worst thing that can happen? Sorry, you can't come in. You weren't recommended. Well, you know, it just, it's hard to explain. But all I would say is that what seemed like an overnight success, my first album didn't even come out until I was almost 30. So,
oh, really?
Yes. And 30, by all intents and purposes, in the rock and roll world, I mean, I'm old enough to be, at 30, probably Olivia Rodrigo's mom, right? I can remember meeting Taylor Swift on an airplane, and she was literally a teenager, and I was, like, old enough to be her mom. So, yeah, and I've been really lucky. I've had now, God, I hate to even say it, but I'm getting ready to turn 60. So I'll be 60 in February. And so I've had 30 amazing years. You know, I've had an incredible journey. And I don't know that you can even have that kind of career anymore, because the attention span is so shrunk and everything is so fast and all about social media and here today and gone tomorrow. I'm just, I feel lucky that I had those pound the pavement years where nobody would give me a record deal because I was a blue-eyed soul singer is what they called it. Back in the day when Madonna, I mean, it was all about Madonna and Paula Abdul, and people were like, we don't know what to do with you.
All of us, when we get to a certain point, have to reckon with the events and moments from our past, some of them really painful. Cheryl is right there now. While filming an upcoming documentary, she revealed something she'd been living with since the very beginning of her career, an experience she once said was a crash course in the dark side of the music industry at that time, but one that she is still wrestling with today.
Showtime's doing a documentary on me, which I think comes out sometime next year.
Oh, how do you feel about that?
Well, you know, I always feel like those things should come out after you're dead and gone. I'm hoping I'm not ushering in like the back nine of my life. But yeah, I mean, it's weird. It was really emotional for me to dig back all the way, you know, to my earliest memories. It was a little bit like sitting in a psychiatrist's chair. Very emotional and very exhausting. Maybe people watch it. Maybe they're burnt out on it. I don't know. But, you know, it's a story worth telling. I mean, there's a lot of stuff in there people wouldn't ever know.
What was the thing that you were the most surprised that you sort of unearthed in that documentary?
Well, you know, one of the things I hadn't really talked about was my experience with being sexually harassed on the Michael Jackson tour. And that was, you know, it is one of those things where we've come so far, but yet we've barely gotten our feet in the room yet. You know, we've got one foot, and it's you know, it's emotional to talk about.
Are there certain conversations we thought we would not be having in 2021 again?
Yeah.
And here we sit.
Yeah.
Here we sit. Do you feel like you're healed from that Cheryl?
I do, certainly. But, you know, it's creepy when you talk about it. And, you know, part of it is the secrecy of not being able to tell anybody for fear of getting fired and, you know, just for it to fall on deaf ears and to really feel completely unprotected and disregarded. I think that's the part for women that is the most troubling, is to have it fall on deaf ears. But yeah, I do. I mean, I feel healed from it. I felt like I didn't feel like the person that I was before going into that, because I was very naive. I was raised to believe that if you're a good person and if you work hard, all good things happen. And that wasn't the way it was. I mean, I learned that the music business is not based on merit. It's based on, or particularly back then, it's based on, you know, payola, favors, what can we make off this person? You know, it's interesting. And it's also interesting to be my age and look at what, how we are portraying ourselves as women as a means of displaying our power. We're using our sexuality. And it's hard for me to understand where's the line of feminism meets manipulation. And it's just, I don't know, it's confusing to me still.
Oh, I'm so sorry that happened to you. I'm so sorry anything bad happens to you, by the way.
Oh, well.
You can't escape the
bruises and the knocks, but that's what makes you who you are, you know?
Did the person who was the, I guess, perpetrator, did that person have to pay a price?
Well, ultimately he wound up getting fired as Michael Jackson's manager. But then later on, I think he died of a massive heart attack after I'd written the song that kind of stirred things up and made him mad. And lawsuits were threatened, and then he passed away. So what can you do?
what was the song? What was the song?
Well, there were two songs. What I Can Do For You was my first record. It was about the experience. And then in the Na-Na song, which is kind of funny, what was happening at the time was Anita Hill, the hearings were going on.
Right.
And of course, President Biden was residing over the Senate hearings, and she was basically disregarded. And Clarence Thomas went on to become Supreme Court judge. And in the lyric, it says, Clarence Thomas and Frank DeLeo in the same line. So you'll have to go back and look at the lyrics.
Coming up next, you didn't think I'd let Cheryl say she was turning 60 without asking her how she really feels about it. Plus, we'll talk more about those beautiful kids. Stay with us.
Spring Black Friday savings are happening now at the Home Depot and also at your front door. Get spring savings delivered to you with free delivery on over 2 million items. Everything you need for spring cleaning, patio decorating, and front yard gardening sent right to you. And if you need it fast, get same-day delivery on thousands of products like fertilizer and seeds to keep your yard looking beautiful. Spring your way with Spring Black Friday savings only at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select in-stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.
So wait, you said the word 60.
I said it.
How did that feel coming off your tongue? How do you sit with 60? How does that feel?
You know those little bumps you get on the side of your tongue that are like a little canker sore or whatever? That's what it feels like. no, I mean, yeah, I don't love it, but I am happy. Something really changed after the cancer episode and getting my kids. Yeah. And, you know, if I never got to sing another song, I would still feel the joy that I feel right now. Mm. And that's a good place to be, you know, for somebody who's always measured themselves by shucking and jiving through, you know, life. Like, look at me, I can twirl, I can sing, I can play the bass and the piano, you know. And to be able to say, you know what, I love my life. It's a great place to be.
Now, what has motherhood given you that your work couldn't, that relationships couldn't?
Well, it's created a barometer for sure. I mean, I don't make any decisions that aren't pretty well decided by virtue of what my kids have going on. So although that I'm sure irritates everyone around me, I don't plan anything without, like, I've already been told by my 11-year-old, he doesn't want to go on the tour this summer.
Oh,
he wants to stay home and play baseball and, you know, hang out with his friends. So
now what do we do?
Well, we're going to, and we got invited to play in Europe the first week of school. I don't want to do that.
Ooh, okay.
We've been learning the lesson of, first of all, compromise. And secondly, friendly, this is what happens when you're six. You can't think of
dictator?
Words.
What?
Friendly dictatorship. Yes. So if it doesn't work in the compromise, then there's the friendly dictatorship. But before I could be happy being a mom, I had to be happy. And that was the first thing. And then being a mom has been the greatest gift and the greatest occupation. I mean, I have full respect for moms across the board.
Do you have room for another love in your life, do you think?
I do.
Do you already have that?
I don't.
Okay, I wasn't sure.
I don't. I mean, I don't want to say sadly. I mean, our family is, I mean, we're complete. It's tricky now. I mean, it's just tricky.
Yeah,
you
sure.
You date somebody and you pretty quickly decide how they might fit or if they unequivocally, you wouldn't even let them near your kids. You know what I mean? And truth be told, I just don't feel like I'm missing it anymore. I mean, I love the idea of it, and I would love to be loved and to love, but my first loves are my boys, and whatever I bring in or whatever comes in, I'm open. I'll just say that. I'm open.
When it came down to, you know, my girls are adopted too. They're 4 and 2. And they know they're adopted.
Yes.
Obviously, I've told them.
Yeah.
And I know more questions are coming as we go.
Yeah.
And I guess I'm looking for a little advice because I don't really quite know. Like, first I thought, should I volunteer information? I thought, no, let me wait till they ask me. There's such tricky conversations to have.
Yeah.
How did you know how to navigate those waters?
Well, I had two different situations with my boys. I knew Wyatt's birth mom, and I did not know Levi's birth parents. But what I did with Wyatt was I made his story. I made a book, The Story of Wyatt. And I had pictures of the day he was born. My mom and dad were there. And I got to take him home. He was 4 hours old. And so I had all these pictures, and it explained who everybody was. And it talked about how, you know, I'd asked God to be a mom, and that I knew that God was going to take care of me, and that if I was supposed to be a mom, I would be. And that lo and behold, God brought you into my life, and but that he came through somebody else's tummy, but I got to be his forever mom, you know. So anyway, he, from a very early age, not only was not interested in it, didn't want to see it at all.
Okay.
And even really up until the age that he was able to understand it, well, actually, period. He's not wanted to see that book. He hasn't been ready. He chose his life, and he didn't want to know about the rest of it. Levi is very, I mean, he's very pragmatic, There is nothing mm-hmm. he will not say or ask. If you want to know if you look fat in a pair of jeans, he will tell you. and he's right off the cuff. Were my birth parents short? Because I really want to play basketball. I mean, these are the things that matter to him, you know. He asks questions, and he has the story of Levi as well. And mm-hmm. he likes it. He doesn't want to look at it. But he's going to be I'm going to go out and find him on my own. And mm-hmm. and I've told both mm-hmm. my boys, when you are ready, you know, mm-hmm. after when you become old enough, like 18, I'll help you. We'll go find him mm-hmm. together. And mm-hmm. nothing will come between the way you and I love each other. But you have mm-hmm. a lot of love. So, mm-hmm. and you love people in a lot of different ways. And families look differently. Neither one of them have asked me why their birth moms gave them away. And mm-hmm. some of those questions will be hard. I mean, I don't know how you feel about it, but I do have that fear of, okay, someday when I'm older, they go find their younger mom. Mm-hmm. And suddenly mm-hmm. I'm going to spend Christmas at my mom and, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. or with my mm-hmm. real brother. And mm-hmm. I get emotional about it and I get scared. But you know what? It's like I tell my dad when he's worrying, there's no point in worrying about it. It's not going to fix it. You know, when you get there, you get there. So that's just the way I'm approaching it.
I think, that sounds healthy. And I like the sort of God's got this. You know, I have those feelings too. And they don't ask many questions now. They're super young, but they do know a lot of things. So I literally some days I get this ouch in my stomach. I'm like, okay, got to be ready. Like, how's this gonna go? What do they think when you're on stage? Are they wigged that you're up there killing it? Or do they think it's...
At early days, they didn't really understand it. Like, I've got videos of both the boys coming out in their PJs. had this wonderful nanny who's now my assistant. And they would always come say goodnight before they'd go to bed, like at 8:30, you know, and I'd just be getting mm-hmm. started. And mm-hmm. and they'd come out, and sometimes they'd come out on stage in their PJs and do a little jig or whatever. And they just... Seeing all those people, that's, you know, they didn't really understand what that meant. And then when I started making the record before the last called Be Myself, and I was making it during school hours, I would go pick them up and I'd bring them back to the studio and we'd work for another couple hours. They got to be around during the making of that record and understand, oh, this isn't just something where she goes out on stage and sings songs. She mm-hmm. works. Like, it's a workplace mm-hmm. and it's like serious work hours and doing things over and over. And then they got interested in it and got to like learn about some of the engineering stuff. And then it became like, oh, okay. So she's not just famous because she has like All I Want to Do or Soak Up the Sun right. or the song from Cars. Yeah. And that made a difference. But, you know, now that they're older, you know, they'll come to the side of the stage and wave and then they'll go back and want to get on their iPads. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, no.
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 Oh, my.
So they make money by helping out.
Is that how they do?
$5 a gig for bringing out guitars. 2 summers ago when we were out with Phil Collins in Europe, about halfway through the gig, Levi's like, we're walking off stage and Levi's like, Mom, can we negotiate a flat rate? $5 a gig doesn't seem like very much. I'm like, are you kidding me? You're 9 years old. How do you know what a flat rate is?
How do you even get that? Which one of your songs speaks to you right now?
Gosh, that's really hard.
Yeah, so many.
I mean, we've done a lot of virtual gigs this year, and I find mm-hmm. that singing Every Day is a Winding Road, I mean, I mm-hmm. sometimes get emotional about it because the actual inspiration of the song was a friend of mine who committed suicide. I know that doesn't sound like that kind of song, but it was, and I wasn't going to put it on the record. And my engineer at the time, who also was friends with this person, said, you have to put it on the record because of the line, I feel like a stranger in my own life. I'm just wondering why I feel so all alone, why I'm a stranger in my own life. And when I sing that now, it feels more immediate to me because of what all has been going on in the last year and a half. And also just the change in all of us, because I am older and I remember what life was like You know, even at an early age, before social media, before cable, before pundits and before...
groupthink, yeah.
Yes, and also before music became so kind of explicitly porn-ish, you know. I mean, there was just something more innocent about life. You know, now some of the lines and some of the songs mean more to me because of my sadness about where we are as a people.
How do you feel about having young kids then? Because sometimes I get into a funk too and I think, wow, we got work to do.
Yeah. I mean, you know, talking about the adoption thing, you know, one of the things that I always feel like is so important is that your kids never feel like there are any secrets. You know, I think secrets can be so damaging and so wounding. And so my intention has always been to raise my kids. I will answer anything they ask me. Just trying to be honest about what it means to be a good person, what it means to be ethical, empathetic, compassionate. You know, they at a certain point will hear those words and feel like I'm being lecherous. But... one of the greatest gifts that you and I have is getting to raise people. And the people that we're raising are going to inherit what we have, and just giving them some tools to deal with what they're going to be handed so that they can understand this isn't, human nature is not to be greedy. It's not to be mean. It's not to get one over.
Yes.
You didn't come in that way. You get programmed to be that way. So, you know, just constantly trying to hammer into them that, your best self will always be heart-driven.
Yeah. Well, I feel like they're looking at it every day in you.
I mean, I think obviously what you're saying is, and I believe this wholeheartedly, there's no stronger example than modeling, because it doesn't matter what you say, it's what they watch that becomes what they emulate. And I've told this story so many times, but it cracks me up every time, and it happens every day. There's always a couple of guys along the way. On our way to school, they're always asking for money and we always give them money. And my 14-year-old will always say, Mom, how much money do you have? And I'll say, I have a 5 and I have a 20. And he'll be like, give me the 20. And he always wants to give money.
Wow.
And it's been that way since he was little. My 11-year-old, who wanted to negotiate the flat fee, is like, Mom, you know, he lives in a nice apartment and like, it downtown, or you know he's gonna walk around the corner and get in his Maserati.
Like, that's so funny.
That's one of the things that I always tell the boys. Everything that you do in life is about intention. You can't when you give somebody money, your blessing is in the giving. What they do with it has nothing to do with your blessing. And it has everything to do with intention. And I really believe that. And I think some lessons you don't get to the second you get them. But other lessons, if you watch it enough, you get what it is. And I believe modeling is much more powerful than anything else.
But that statement right there, what you just said, is such a great thing to remember. Like, your job is to give.
Yes.
Whatever they do is their job. That's okay.
Right.
It's not your concern.
Yeah.
So just lastly, do you feel at this moment in life, you know, optimistic? Like, I hear we're all mixed bags, obviously.
Yes, yeah.
But do you feel optimistic in this moment?
I do. You know, one of the things that's been funny, I've been talking about, people more recently have been talking about, how do you stay grounded? How do you stay, how do you keep your peace? And I have to have hope. I mean, once you lose hope, then where do you go from there? And I see hope in my kids' eyes. I mean, they are brilliant. They are asking hard questions that I wouldn't have asked when I was 11 and 14. Mm. But they are wise. And this generation of kids, you know, they're more prepared than we were. And I do have a lot of hope, a lot of optimism.
Cheryl, I've thoroughly enjoyed our conversation. Thank you so much for visiting with me. I love you too.
Let's get our kids to marry each other.
Oh my God,
let's
that
do
would
it.
Be perfect. Yes. All right, honey. Good seeing
All right,
you.
It's good to see you too.
Take care.
Thanks, Hoda.
You too.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey guys, thanks so much for listening and going on this journey with me. If you like what you've heard, and I sure hope you do, please give Making Space a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. And be sure to tell your friends and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. Making Space with Hoda Kotb is produced by Allison Berger and Ursula Summer, along with associate producer Olivia Ruchard, researcher Rachel Young, and audio engineer Bob Mallory. Original music by John Estes. Bryson Barnes is our technical director. Minika Thoria is our executive producer. Soraya Gage is our general manager. And Madeline Herringer is our head of editorial.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.